This is URN,
the Sports Show Breakdown.
Hello and welcome back. To start off, we're going to be looking at the World Series of Baseball final that happened on the weekend, I believe, and it was between Kansas City Royals and the New York Mets. And from what I've seen of the game, I'm not really a big baseball fan, but the Kansas City Royals were 2-0 down going into the top of the ninth innings, and then they scored two runs to tie to take it into an extra 12th innings, and in which they racked up five more runs. Now, Luke, you're obviously a coach of the university baseball team, one of the university baseball teams. Now, as I said, I don't really know a lot about American sports in general, but what were your reactions to the game and what were your thoughts of the game?
I thought that the whole series itself originally was going to be pretty boring, to be honest. I'm a Red Sox fan, and anyone who knows anything really about baseball this season will know that the Red Sox have not been that successful. So I kind of petered out towards the end of the season anyway, but it was actually a really interesting series. I mean, the Royals came behind in, well, they played through five games. I think the Royals came behind in three of the five to actually get the win. Up until around about the ninth inning, they were behind in all those games. So it was just holding it out until the end that the Mets couldn't quite do. So the last game itself, I mean, it was a really exciting game. I mean, the first game went to about 14 or 15 innings. Obviously, the last one went through to 12. So certainly for someone that went into it not really expecting a whole lot from it, I think it turned out that these two kind of quite underdog teams, the Royals last won the World Series in 85, and I think the Mets actually, by coincidence, won it in 86, so the year after. But we're talking about these teams not really having been on top of baseball for a good 30 or so years. So it turned out to be, it was a pretty interesting watch.
Do you feel that there's a gap in the sporting market for maybe some of the baseball teams in America to come over into England to perhaps play some games at some football grounds, or turn some of these major grounds into perhaps a baseball field, and then, you know, get more attention from the English public?
I mean, it'd be nice. It would be a nice idea, but I think, again, because baseball doesn't really have that same ability to translate as American football, I think that is something that certainly is going to be a few years off. I mean, all of the industries, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, all the American sports, they are looking to expand, and they are of course looking to get more and more fans across the world. At the minute, a lot of them have a major market in the US, and there's so many people living outside there that if they want to get more money, they are going to have to appeal to.
Could you give us a quick, maybe a couple of minute rundown of what the basic rules are, and can you please explain to me, because I was reading through a couple of articles before the show, what is a sac fly?
A sac fly, okay. Well, I mean, baseball in generally is a game, it's a game where you try and get around the bases. I mean, it's similar to softball, but one of the key differences is the way that you work on bases. So whereas a lot of people look at baseball and they think it's just about sort of swinging and hitting a ball, you don't get any points for that. Your key is to make it around all the bases, and sometimes that's by a home run. More often than not, it's not as a result of a home run. It's because somebody's made it around to first base and they've got to second, they've got to third, that kind of thing. So it's really about working your way around. Obviously, that means that if you're a good pitcher, you're not going to be letting people hit you. If you've got a good defense, you're not going to be letting people get around the bases in the first place. And then countering that, if you've got a good offense, you are able to hit the ball, you're able to put it in play, and once you're on the base, and this is the other big distinction with baseball and softball, you can actually steal the next base. So it's a rule where you can basically go even before the ball has been pitched, and you can try and steal that second base. It's different to softball. The ball is dead until it's been pitched in softball, and it is quite instantly after it's been hit as well. So you don't have that same ability there, which is one of the major things that I push with our team that we've got here, you know, working around the bases, and it is one of the major things that you see. And linked to that is the sac fly. If you've got somebody, for example, who's at third base, then obviously they need to get home in order to get a run. Now, if you've got fewer than three outs, because the game, the innings sort of ends on three outs, if you've got a guy who's got one out, for example, if he hits the ball into the outfield, and I'm aware that this is probably going to be kind of quite an instant discussion, it is a difficult thing to explain quickly, but if he hits that into the outfield and then the fielder catches it, from the minute that fielder has caught the ball, the guy at third base can then run. It's a rule called tagging up, which is quite a complex baseball thing. But the idea is basically that if the hitter is able just to put the ball in play and particularly get that into the outfield, then it's a race effectively between that guy's throw to get to home plate and the runner running from third to get to home. So it's one of several tactics that's used in baseball, I suppose, to score a run, but at the sacrifice of the actual hitter himself, who obviously is caught out.
Now, moving on to obviously the NFL, which again is another sport that neither me nor Lee know much about. So
yeah, a bit outnumbered here, aren't I?
We're going to throw it over to you. I believe that Jack does occasionally watch some NFL games, but obviously we spoke about perhaps the Major League Basketball coming.
baseball, sorry, coming over into the UK. And that obviously did happen on the weekend with the NFL. And obviously it was the Kansas City Chiefs absolutely destroyed the Detroit Lions. Now, I don't know if you have watched this game. Would you like to just elaborate on what happened in the game?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the whole thing. I was away on Sunday. But in terms of what happened, I mean, Kansas City are having a pretty good season so far. Detroit having the worst season. You know, they're not a team that should be this bad. They've only won one game all year. I think they've lost six or seven. They have got the worst record. I think they've lost seven. They've got a 1-7 record, which is the worst in the whole of the NFL. And even though they took a pretty early lead, even though they put a lot of commitment into the game, I mean, they flew out about 3 or 4 days before Kansas City in an attempt to sort of just get the edge and to, I suppose, acclimatise to Britain. Obviously, yeah, it didn't help in the end. I mean, despite an early lead, Kansas City went and scored 38 points without a response to get through to the end. And you know, the scoreline does say it all, that there's nothing else really in Detroit's defence for this. It was a really shoddy showing. And, I mean, the result was a pretty fair representation of the game and really of Detroit's season so far.
Now, moving on, we're going to be talking a bit about the Formula One, obviously the Mexican Grand Prix.
Rosberg finally managed to win after 3 pole positions without a win, and it was his first win in 4 months. Now, perhaps it wasn't the most exciting race, but does it really even matter?
Doesn't matter to the fans, but Hamilton, that's the difference. We're not Lewis Hamilton. We don't see it as it matters. But to him, he wants to make sure that he's on top of his teammate, saying, you're not going to beat me. And he wants to maintain that this season, next season, and for every season that Rosberg is at Mercedes. And it was a symbolic win for Rosberg, because I think for this whole season, and actually coming back from Spa last year when they had that crash, Hamilton used that in a sort of PR manner to profile himself as the good guy in the team, and it allowed him to diminish Rosberg as a character. And Rosberg, I think, suffered greatly from that. So this is a massive win for Rosberg, make no bones about it, because this is him showing he's not out for the count. And if he can finish the end of the season with maybe another victory, it will look good as a competition for next season.
Now, you mentioned Hamilton will obviously be gutted about Rosberg, his teammate, winning. Now, there was a bit of controversy in the race, although it was not, like I said, one of the most interesting races to talk about. But Mercedes called Rosberg in for a second pit stop. Now, they were originally going to try and go for a one stop, and then they said, right, Rosberg, we're seeing some degradation. We've got some canvassing on your tyres. We're going to call you in and fit you with a new set of medium tyres. So he went into the pit, and then a couple of laps later, Hamilton got the same message. And now for a few laps, he ignored team orders and said, you know what, I'm feeling fine. My tyres feel fine to me. I'm going to stay out and I'm not going to listen to my team. Now, he did do that for a couple of laps. And then obviously the team gave him an order and told him that this is an instruction. You have to come into the pits. And obviously he did go on to pit at the end of his lap and then get fitted with new tyres and immediately ask for some feedback on how the tyres were doing and how worn down they were, because perhaps, you know, he perhaps felt that he's been hard done by the team. You know, he perhaps may have felt that he could have went on to win the race and Rosberg not perhaps might have finished second. So, Lee, what are your opinions on that and the whole team order situation, and do you think that it was the right decision for Hamilton to come in, or do you think he should have stayed out?
It's not Hamilton's decision to make in that respect, because a standard procedure for most teams would be if they've got a pit stop worth of cushion, which is around 20 seconds in a race, might be give or take a few seconds here, they want to make sure they're going to get to the end of the race in as safe as possible, and by doing that, put on a new set of boots to get you home so there's no deg concerns. And they would have made it most likely, degradation wise. But obviously, if they can make sure they're going to get home, they did. So they put a new set on Rosberg's car for tyres. And then they had to do the same for Hamilton, because otherwise he wouldn't have been given the choice. He only had the choice to make because Rosberg came in.
Now, moving on to, obviously, the Rugby World Cup. And it was the final this weekend between New Zealand and Australia. Now, for any of our viewers that didn't watch the game, New Zealand did manage to beat Australia by 17 points. It was 34-17, the final score. Now, I managed to catch most of the game. I got back in time for the end of the first half, and then before it was half time, I popped off to my local supermarket to get some snacks to watch the game in the second half. And when I came back, I left in, I think it was 9-3, and I came back and it was just about 5 minutes into the second half and it was 21-3. So a lot happened in, you know, the end of the first half and the start of the second half. I think it was New Zealand might have got a couple of tries and converted tries in there. But if any of you guys did watch the game, what did you think of it? Do you think that perhaps New Zealand were the right winners from that game?
Yeah, I watched it. It was New Zealand were absolutely dominating. Well, no, they weren't dominating in first half, but their level of rugby was at a higher level compared to Australia. I mean, Australia's back line were all over them, but I mean, Pocock and Hooper both had great games, but New Zealand's hands were just unbelievable. I mean, that first try, I can't remember who got it. It was right in the corner. It was really impressive. But no, in the second half, New Zealand actually had, again, their 15 sent off for a questionable tackle. And then Pocock got a... They went for the line, they drove over, Pocock got the try, and then Kudrani, he got a sort of breakaway try, which brought it to 21-17, which for me, I mean, I didn't want Australia to win, but that made it really exciting. You know, suddenly, all of a sudden, it was all to play for. And then Dan Carter dropped in, just slotted an absolutely incredible drop goal like he did last week. I think it was maybe sort of 40 metres out. Under pressure, just slotted it straight between the posts. They got a penalty, and then 78th, 79th minute, they got another try.
Jose Mourinho, under pressure at Chelsea, you know, after the loss at the weekend against Liverpool, they went 1-0 up in the early stages. I think it was within 4 minutes they were 1-0 up, and then it just went to hell from there. They conceded a goal, Coutinho equalised, then he got his second of the game, and then later on Benteke managed to get a goal and complete the 3-1 win for Liverpool. Now, Mourinho has only managed to get 11 points from 11 games this season, and has only got 3 wins. Now, his next Premier League game is away against Stoke. As you know, Stoke and the Britannia Stadium is not a really good combination. You know, it's a really tough place to go. But Lee, as you are the Chelsea fan in the studio, I just wanted your opinions on Mourinho at the moment at Chelsea and whether or not he should be sacked.
I have nothing to say. I wish I had nothing to say. No, he shouldn't be sacked. I think that's ludicrous to say. There was I was looking at a Chelsea fan forum a couple of days ago. It was about 5,000 fans took part about whether to sack Mourinho or not. 75% of the fans still want him. We were still singing his name against Liverpool, against Stoke. Don't know what is going on. The players, in my opinion, have to be to blame. But I do not think Mourinho has given a good account of himself in this season, between the whole Eva Canero saga and how he's dealt with the media. You know, and usually his general tactic is deflect pressure from the players, right thing to do. But he's made a bit of a fool of himself at times, unfortunately, I think, this season.
He would rather play under Jose Mourinho, he'd rather play and lose under Jose Mourinho than play and win under Jose Mourinho. Now, what do you think of those comments made? I mean, they are alleged comments at the moment, so we have no confirmation. Obviously, Fabregas is denying those comments and rejects all of those claims that he said anything of the like. But do you perhaps think that there is some truth to this?
I can't say for sure, but Frank Lampard was interviewed recently, or on M&F, sorry, Monday Night Football. He came out and said he doesn't believe this. And I can't say I can, especially at Chelsea, when they're built on experienced players generally who have created a spine at the club, where, you know, even through the bad times, whenever we're not playing as well as we could be or there has been controversy, they'll pull us through. But you can't deny anything. There's something that is clearly wrong at this club. We are Premier League champions. We convincingly took the Premier League title last season, and we sit in 15th place, and we're supposed to be built on a great defence. We're conceding more than 2 goals a game. There is something wrong, in my opinion, behind the scenes that we can't see.
Okay, so now, obviously, moving away from Chelsea and looking at one of the games that did happen on the weekend on Sunday, and it was between Everton and Sunderland. Now, that game, for those of you that didn't watch it, it did end Everton 6, Sunderland 2. What are you guys' thoughts about Sam Allardyce and his job security at the moment? I know he's only just come into the club, but do you think that there's perhaps already some doubt as to whether or not he'll finish a season as manager there?
He's the man for the job. If there's anyone you want to get you out of a sticky situation in the Premier League, you want Big Sam. He's that man for the job. But you can only do so much. I don't believe there's too many miracles that can happen in football, unless Harry's behind it at Portsmouth, maybe. Because they've just got an awful team, in my opinion. Especially their defence is shocking. I mean, Allardyce himself said it. They went to 2-2, I think, and then he said there was a lack of discipline and understanding from the players. It's baffling. I think it's telling of where Premier League defending has gone in the last couple of years. We can look back, I don't know, you look back to the 2007-08 season, Champions League final, you had a defence for Chelsea built of Carvalho, Terry, Ashley Cole,
And then on the other side, you have Rio Ferdinand, Patrice Evra, Gary Neville, Nemanja Vidic. These are top quality defenders. And as a whole, we've lost the top level of defending has decreased, I think, in Premier League football. And it's trickled down to every level of club.
This is URN.
The Sports Show Breakdown.